Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Snell Nation. It is I, Sir Thomas, your friendly neighborhood anti-authoritarian, just back again just to have a little conversation. And well, before I go into the actual topic of the evening, I'll just jump on a short, just a soapbox, just for a minute. So the question comes up every once in a while, just what does it mean to be a anti-authoritarian? What exactly is that? And I've had some people make assumptions about what it is, and some people attempt to tell me what it is. And what it usually turns into is a simple statement, you know, or a question, but framed in such a way that it's a misrepresentation or a misunderstanding. And the way that question is phrased is why are you against authority? And I've had to correct people on numerous occasions, and I've taken the time to explain a little bit, and I'm happy to explain again. It's kind of a statement that has to be renewed every couple of months, like some sort of subscription to Netflix or something. But what it means is that a anti-authoritarian takes the time to analyze different forms of authority. It can be law enforcement. It could be federal agencies, federal entities, anything within a societal structure that stands in the gap, stands in that place as a form of authority. And what I like to do is I like to take a look at it. I look at the history of the agency or the agent, the individual, or different branches of government, and ask the question, just, is this form of authority necessary? Is this form of authority legitimate? And that's taking a objective just look and analysis, not subjective, no raw emotions are involved, no triggers here and there and little sound bites from media, mainstream media or social media, but it's taking a look at the facts. Taking a look at, well, some of the headlines, sure, but just taking a dive into each agency or organization or branch of government and just evaluating their effectiveness. And then if you reach the conclusion that something isn't necessary or that something is illegitimate, then just posing the questions, you know, and presenting that perspective to people, and then asking people that question. Hey, do you believe that this agency is legitimate? Do you feel or believe that this particular form of authority is legitimate? So it's just creating a conversation. It's nothing nothing loud, nothing dangerous or absurd. Of course, well, I guess you could say asking relevant questions and critical thinking and analysis and things like that. You know, some might see it as absurd in the year 2023, but I disagree. And, you know, as a public servant or a civil servant or a soldier or government employee or, you know, however you want to frame that, I believe that it's important to ask these questions, because if we reach a place, you know, if we reach a point where we can't ask these relevant questions, where the citizenry can't analyze their government and their agencies, then, you know, I would have to say that that's a very terrible sign, and a sign that we are not even close to a democracy, not even close to a constitutional republic, as people like to throw those things out there. Of course, I would argue that we've strayed away from that a long time ago. But if you can't even ask the questions, then what exactly are we? You know, what are we operating under? What exactly is the citizen? You know, as how is it defined? You know, considering all those things that I've just said. So when it comes to the term just anti-authoritarian, I just think it's important to ensure that people understand. Because there's some that, you know, they take it to the extreme and they think, wow, you're against authority. You know, well, don't you work in government? How can you be against authority? Well, no, I'm not against all forms of authority. I'm just against any forms of illegitimate authority. That's where I become concerned, and that's where I like to ask questions, and I think it's important that we continue to do that. So there's that. So I'm going to, I know I said it was going to be on my soapbox for just a second, but you know what? It was a couple of seconds. According to my timer here is about 5.5 minutes or so, but I think it's necessary. So, hey, that's out of the way. So I'm picking it up. I'm going to set it down over here. And now I want to dive into something else that's not really that far off the mark. When it comes to words and terms and things that we use that tend to be twisted or misunderstood or overused in 2023, you know, I got to throw one out there. And that word would have to be patriot. And you know, I hear a lot of people say this person's a patriot or that person's a patriot. I'm a patriot. You're a patriot. Patriot, patriot, patriot. Sure. Okay. What does it actually mean? You know, and it's, you know, bare bones definition. It's just a person who loves and supports or defends his or her country, you know, plain and simple. But I've seen people do some pretty crazy things based off of their raw emotions and just being galvanized and called to action by, you know, it could be a political party, it could be a, you know, a mob, a group of friends. You know, we've seen it over the past few years, and it's been in just some scary times, and we've watched people. You know, we watch people go to our Capitol and raise a bit of sane at that whole shenanigans in January 2021, you know, and raid the Capitol and loot and yell and scream and shout and believe themselves to be patriots or believe themselves to be patriotic or saving America. And I watch some of the signage that people are holding up and truly believing that they were doing the right thing. Because they felt that the election of 2020 was a farce and, you know, their guy didn't get in and, hey, we're going to go be patriots. And it was a case study in itself. It was interesting, but we've seen it time and time again. We've seen it on the left. We've seen it on the right and everywhere in between where a group of people get together. And they have they're operating, I guess you could say, a collaborative silo within an echo chamber. And they all say, hey, I dislike this about this particular situation, or I dislike this candidate or that candidate. Hey, I agree with you. Hey, I agree with you. And they just all agree with each other. And then they come up with some sort of plan. And not enough people raise their hand and say, hey, I think this is a bad idea. Hey, no, we're going to be patriots. You know, we're going to be patriotic. We're saving this country, blah, 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 and put themselves in a pretty nasty situation. And going back to that example about it was originally titled as an insurrection, but I think it was more of a riot, an extreme riot. Sure. I wouldn't call it an insurrection. Anyone who calls it that, I don't believe they truly understand the term or the history of actual insurrections that involved a lot of guns, a lot of casualties, a lot of madness. This was short-term madness that some would say the government apparatus may have benefited from it because It pushed a lot of bills and regulations and things that were hanging out there that were tipping one way and pushed it another. And it gave a lot of individuals the ammunition they need to push forward even more legislation going forward. And they can always go back to that moment where these individuals believe themselves to be patriots and being patriotic. In actuality, they were operating from a place of raw emotion and frustration, and played right into their hands. You know, there being those, you could say the special interests, you could say special interests that collude with some of our political officials and things. And there's nothing conspiratorial about this. I mean, this is things that we've seen in plain sight that comes out every couple of years where someone, we find out that, oh, this political official actually, you know, colluded with this agency or that agency or with this corporation or that corporation. It's just, it happens so often that it's become normalized. You know, we don't even give it a second thought. It's just, okay, well, it is what it is. And then we just kind of move on. But that's another term. And I think one of the worst ways the term patriot was used was with the birth of the Patriot Act in October 2001. So we had, you know, September 11th, which was horrific. It's something that most of us didn't even see coming. And I remember where I was on that day, and I was in college, I was at Kent State, and I just was walking through a lobby, through an area, and I saw people huddled around a TV, and I watched as the second plane hit the tower, and everyone started panicking and running for their cars, and I'm in Ohio. And this happened in New York, and people were going nuts. They thought it was the end of everything, you know, and it was a horrific tragedy. But when these horrific tragedies happen, it's another moment where we can't ask certain questions. We can't pursue certain things, even if there are things that are just right in plain sight. And in moments like these, you know, you can't ask, or immediately after, you can't ask, okay, who benefited from these tragedies? You know, who profited from these tragedies or from this particular tragedy? And also asking the question, just, okay, how did this happen? Who was held responsible? You know, where's all this crazy legislation coming from so quickly? And the Patriot Act was one piece that just came out of nowhere. I mean, it was the structures collapsed. There was still smoke in the air. They were looking for survivors, and just out of nowhere, still, boom, you know, here's this Patriot Act, which was just rushed through Congress and signed into law, and everyone just applauded and accepted it. And like many things that come down as far as legislation goes, you know, it's something that was pitched as a temporary measure. You know, we needed to give our law enforcement agencies, you know, some teeth. You know, we needed to give them the ability to detect and deter terrorism, you know. And there were some people that criticized it, but not many at that time, because a lot of times in history, when an event like this happens, we get emotional. And there were a lot of people that were just vengeance, 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 attack whoever, you know, even if it's the wrong country or wrong countries, just go, you know, just attack. And there were people that were just applauding this thing and the Patriot Act, you know, it just sounds, you know, very American and very, you know, yeah. So, but when you dig into it, there's so much of it. It just gives so much power to a lot of the federal agencies and law enforcement agencies. And, you know, it gave them a lot of powers where it could be worded that, okay, you're, you know, suspected terrorists or alleged terrorist organizations or connections to this or alleged connections to that. And it left even more gray area, you know, and slightly less oversight where, you know, an individual, an agent or an agency can say, hey, well, we believe, or, you know, it's come to our attention that this person may be tied to this or may be tied to that. And due process just would go out the window and people could just be detained for extended periods of time and for whatever reason and not have access to communication or access to an attorney or any of those wonderful rights that we love to talk about. You know, we love our rights in this country, even though they tend to be trampled on quite often. But the Patriot Act, and it's something that hung out there for years and years and years and years and years. And then in, I believe it was 2015, there were some provisions and things that were going to expire. And those things were extended. And what was that thing called? Well, it was called the Freedom Act, you know, and yeah, you know, so here we are, or there we were, I should say, 14 years after that horrific tragedy, that horrific attack happened. And now all this power has been given to some of the federal agencies, to some of these entities, and it's time. Hey, well, should we let go of some of this control? Should we get some? No, nope. We should extend it because there's more things to be afraid of. You know, there are more boogeymen out there. There's more this, you know, we need more taxpayer funding for this. And, you know, of course, then you have the federal budget that goes up and up and up and up and up and up. You know, it seems like it just always goes up. It never goes down. I mean, we get the occasional government shutdown scare, sure. But it just keeps on trucking along. But it's just the words, the language that always fascinates me and how easy it is just for us to just run behind something. And you can just call something a Patriot Act. You can call it a Freedom Act. You can call it a Liberty Act. And we just, oh, yeah, it sounds nice. Even if you dig into it, it's like, okay, this doesn't sound freedom-y at all or patriotic. No, it is, you know, and it just, which is always nice to go back and like, okay, well, what does this word actually mean? You know, freedom, you know, the power, right to act, speak, or think as one wants without hindrance or restraint. Okay. Power or right to act, speak, or think as one wants without hindrance or restraint. How, if that's the definition of freedom, I mean, how free are we? You know, and why? You know, why isn't it a common thing for us to ask that question, to ask ourselves that question, and to take a hard look at the world around us and how it really works, or take a hard look at our country and how it actually works and ask that question, you know, are you really free? You know, so I would venture to say that in some ways, yes, in a lot of ways, no. And that's something I'll dive into in another podcast. I just wanted to and bring someone else on just so we can dive into that and pick apart just exactly what does it mean to be free? And then actually take a look at where we are and what freedoms we have and what freedoms we don't, what freedoms we've lost that we have given up over the past 20 years, 20 plus years, and how over time we just seem to give away a little more, a little more, and a little more. And we don't, when I say we, I'm just talking about the citizenry. We don't take the time to step back and analyze and evaluate and then reanalyze and reevaluate our position and our situation and demand legitimate changes. Changes that are driven by the facts, that are driven by the data, that are driven by the needs of the many as opposed to the needs of the few. You know, pretty, I think it's pretty basic stuff. But of course, you know, you throw these things out there, sometimes people look at you like you're crazy, you know, like you have a third eye on your forehead or something. You know, it's crazy talk. You know, how dare you challenge people to ask questions, just about their government and how they're funded and the work that they do. And are they efficient? Are they effective? Are they relevant? You know, questions like that. And if it's determined that this is irrelevant, this is illegitimate, well, then the citizenry should have the authority as the citizenry to make those adjustments or demand that their elected officials that allegedly represent them. I keep being told that, but I'm not seeing a lot of examples. I'm not seeing a lot of examples of that, but hey, that's a whole nother thing. But there should be, I believe, an annual evaluation. You know, everyone gets excited about, you know, tax time in April. Well, excited might be the wrong word. Maybe, you know, a little sad, a little frustrated. Hey, you know, I'm giving up all this money and I'm funding all these things. Why are there still potholes, you know, all over my road and all that good stuff? But I think there should be an annual evaluation of federal agencies. And I mean, a real evaluation, a real audit. And it's something that should be presented to the citizens is, you know, something that's transparent, something that is completely open. And gives us all an opportunity to provide our opinion based on those findings. The finding is, hey, you know, the CIA is they cost this much in taxpayer funding each year, and they've shown themselves to be ineffective in these areas, or their agents are running around committing all sorts of crimes behind the scenes. I don't know, like sex crimes and crimes against children, which. That's something that's been documented and keeps coming up, then we should be able to decide, hey, we believe that it's time to cut their funding. We believe it's time for that money to go towards some other agency or some other initiative. I believe there should be conversations like this every single year around the same time. Heck, you know, you can make it April, make it March, you know, why not? But these things, they don't happen. I mean, we're very busy. We're busy with our jobs. We're busy with our families. We're busy with our sports. We're busy with our alcohol. We're busy with our video games. We're busy with a lot of things. Some of them matter, some of them don't. But at some point, the citizens will be put in the situation or situations where we'll have no choice but to face these realities, to ask these questions, to take these challenges. We won't be able to just ignore them or pass them on to our children or to our children's children and so on, because things are a bit of a mess. You know, it's not all doom and gloom. Yeah, sure, the economy's a mess, the housing market's a mess, you know, all that good stuff, but I believe that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I believe that there's a chance, but I believe in order for that chance to matter, for that opportunity to matter, I believe that the citizens need to become a bit more aware and a bit more interested in things that actually matter. Sure, you know, professional sports, collegiate sports, watching your games, you know, your favorite teams. Hey, I think that's great. That's something I used to participate in. I had my favorite teams. Sure. Watched all the games, you know, the San Antonio Spurs. That was my basketball team. I watched all the games. Cincinnati Bengals. Hey, all kinds of support. Even MLS, Major League Soccer. Hey, had my team, my Columbus Crew. Go to the games. I was right there having a good old time. You know, I think it's a great thing to have that outlet, you know, to let off some steam. And, you know, we love our sports. We love our I guess you could say, bread and circuses of the new. But at some point, those things, you have to table those things, even for a moment, and focus on the things that truly impact your lives and the lives of those around you, that impact your children and impact your neighborhoods, your communities, you know, all those things. And I just don't think that that happens enough on a large enough scale for it to really ignite any real change, which is why, you know, so many scenarios and things that have come up over the past few years feel so samey, feel so familiar, because it is. It's very familiar. You know, the same politicians making the same promises and failing spectacularly, while at the same time servicing their donors and their owners. And we just continue to just truck along, you know, and it's something that we can't do it forever because it's not sustainable. Burning through tons and tons of made up money under a made up structure and made up institutions and made up forms of authority, while people have less and less time to be themselves, to be human, to spend time with their families, to think, to love, to grow, you know, to find true happiness, to find their passions and hobbies and all these things, and have a truly meaningful life. You know, I think that's going to force society as a whole to reevaluate and to demand actual change, real change, not the fake, not the Obama change, you know, not that stuff, not the Trump change where the person, you know, the candidate seems interesting and they make all these grand assertions and, you know, and they're going to do all these things. And they talk about how rigged everything is, but at the same time they benefit from it and then they move on. I'm talking about actual change. And it's not going to come from a politician. I'm sorry. It's not going to come from some billionaire CEO, you know, or anything like that. It's something that could come from the 330 million citizens in the United States that keep this whole thing running. That's where the change is going to come from. That's where it has to come from. It's not going to come from the top for obvious reasons, because I mean, it's as things, the way things are structured now benefits those at the very top. So why would they want to drastically change the system and reshape it and mold it in a way that benefits the 99.9% that are in some ways, you know, have been forgotten about. So that's just my take. Just some things that I find interesting. I find a lot of things interesting, but just taking a look at language and taking a look at the words we use and how they're used and how they're used in legislation, how they're used by our politicians, how we use them when we communicate with each other, I think is fascinating. I think it's something worth exploring. So those are just some of my thoughts. I'd love to get some feedback from the audience. Please, you know, if you have some special words that you think are used in a very unique way or in a very destructive way, words such as patriot or patriotic or freedom or free, please feel free to let me know. And I'd love to talk about more of just language and how it works and operates and shifts and changes and grows and develops within our society. So with that, I have to jump off and get some sleep, but it was great having a little bit of a chat here, and we will certainly talk again soon. Snail Nation out.